Hey guys, and welcome to episode 6 of Office Hours, the Rocket Jump Film School podcast. And today we're going to sit down with Joey and Will, who actually acted in and wrote the Escape from Dull Exposition video that we just did. And we're going to talk a little bit about making that video and writing it and what exposition can do for your films and how exposition actually works. So let's get into it.
Rocket Jump Film School, scene 1, Apple.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 7 of Office Hours, the Rocket Jump Film School podcast. And today we are talking with Will Campos and Joey Scoma, who wrote and graded the Escape from Dull Exposition video that we just did. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and what exposition is and how to use it in your films. And yeah, thanks for talking.
Yeah.
Here we are.
So quick shout out to Mike Simons, who helped write it as well.
Oh, awesome.
Yes. Yeah. So
Mike, our creative director.
It's just Mike's job, though, so he doesn't really get credit.
It's my job, too. I got to write
Watch
stuff.
Watch this podcast, Mike.
We will see.
I'm a little sassy today.
So, why Escape from New York? Can we start with that?
So, why don't you start?
I was so surprised when you just handed this script over, and it just Joey as Snake Plissken, and I was just, I don't know why. I love it. I'm glad that it was, but I don't know where this came from in your head.
So
you just gave me the role of a lifetime.
So Will wrote it, and Joey acted it out.
The idea originally came from I love when a scene is also I always do this thing with I love watching movies and then thinking about how the movie is about the movie. Christopher Nolan's movies are always, they're all about filmmaking, and it's interesting to kind of pick them apart. And we were driving around. It was me and Des Dolly, who's my co-writer on our upcoming mystery science fiction project, which we've talked about 8,000 times.
You're not supposed to say
we're driving on a lunch break, and he was listening to the Escape from New York soundtrack because John Carpenter just always does this amazing synth music, and so we were just blasting that. And on the soundtrack, they have little dialogue bits as separate tracks. One of which is just the entire Lee Van Cleef, Kurt Russell scene at the beginning of the movie where he's, we need your help, damn it. And telling him about the president and stuff
We got 24 hours.
And we were just, and we were listening to this scene, and I was like, I love how this is a great exposition scene. The audience is finding out about the mission and about the story through the dramatic context of the main character finding out. And the information is all dramatized. He's trying to convince this guy to take this mission, and he's doing that by explaining it to him and trying to persuade him, and we're also using that to hear about his backstory and stuff like that. I was like, this is really cool. And I was like, wouldn't it be fun? It just kind of popped in my head to do this weird meta thing with it.
Yeah.
Where I was like, wouldn't it be fun to do a scene about exposition that was an exposition scene? But it's like, yeah. And so that was just kind of the original kernel of the idea. And then I remembered that Joey works at the film school and that you're a huge Snake Plissken fan.
Yeah.
You cosplayed as Snake Plissken in episode 5, season 2.
Yeah,
you can find Jumpin' Jacks in the crowd with the
Cobra.
Snake Plissken tat, but I think you insisted the makeup people paint on you.
Yeah, because I didn't want to just go as Snake Plissken. I wanted to go as Plissken shirtless.
The Cobra.
If we could just do a side-by-side of
right here,
Kurt Russell shirtless with his tattoo and me from season 2.
It would look
mine.
Exactly the same.
Yeah, it was identical.
It's seamless.
It looks so good. Yeah.
That was your Leapmus costume, right?
And for no reason. I remember Freddie just laughing when I showed up because Jumpin' Jacks is quote unquote in the scene, but really you could just have an extra do that entire scene. And I, Aaron spent a good hour just painting the snake on the
She was like, what the F? Yeah.
I had to shave, it was a full thing, so I'm glad that we didn't have to
to veer into just one little bit of VGHS trivia for the moment. Stuff like that is my favorite thing. It's that in season 2 is hilarious. And then way back in season 1, Chris Papavasilio, who came up with the idea with me, he cameos very briefly in this obscure reference to 3 O'Clock High.
Right.
And it's literally the exact costume with like this like French Foreign Legion beret and trench coat. And yeah. Lane just literally was able in an afternoon to just whip up Pitch Perfect this costume from this obscure movie. And it was like, this is great. And just again, totally does not need to be in there.
That,
but
and the Super Solvers costume.
And the Wah Super Solvers costume. Yeah. Super Solvers a lot of stuff like that. Yeah. Anyway, we don't have to turn this
into
a...
there's been a history of Plissken.
History of Plissken love.
In the Rocket Jump universe. Yeah.
Well, it's very associated with you too, Joey, I think, because you're most vocal about how much you love.
I remember I pitched it. I think it was literally, I was like I was talking to you, Cherish, and I was like, wouldn't it be funny if like we did a kind of video like this? You're like, that's great. Can you get it to me by Friday? And I was like, oh, okay, all right. That's how things roll in film school.
Yeah.
It was this definitely
Cherish
like,
gets stuff done.
I kind of spit it out like as a half-baked idea. And then I was like, oh, shit, I guess I'm doing this
gotta
now.
Deliver.
It's a really good idea. I need to write
like,
that
okay,
as a
so
script.
Is it, it's coming out now, right? And I was just like, all right.
Yeah. To be fair, there was like a week in between. I was like, that's a really good idea. You should think about that. And then I brought it to you guys. And like, we all think it's a great idea. And then I was like, okay, I need a script by Wednesday.
Okay.
Well, I do think that it is very unique because film school has been going through some, you know, we're brand new. This is our first sketch tutorial, mm-hmm. like in a way. Like
well,
where
I would
it
say
is,
the script formatting one a
this,
little bit too.
The script formatting one, it has a crossover there between traditional like talking head and reenactments. So this was just a straight up little short, which I thought was awesome. And anything else that we can do that, because I feel like most of the people out there were like, this was really great. I didn't realize I was learning until it was over.
I was really scared it wasn't going to work like at all for anybody.
Really?
I thought like, because I wrote it and I'm like, is anyone going to, this is such a weird thing to do. Like, is anyone going to get this whatsoever? But I was really happy by the response to it that people actually seemed to be like, oh yeah, I really like that. That's really fun. Like that's a cool way of, you know, teaching exposition. Yeah.
And I think pointing people to the actual scene in the actual movie.
Yeah.
A is good for society because more people should watch that movie.
Yeah.
But also B, you know, it kind of gives you the real, you know, the real reference, so that you can actually see how narrative exposition is demonstrated. So it just by linking those two.
Yeah, it combines all the things that I love about Rocket Jump Film School is that we're looking at other films that we like, but we're also making a film while teaching you about film at the same time. So we got, you know, like the fun part about shooting Escape from Dull Exposition was like I got to work with Joey on like the shot that he really wanted, which was that opening shot. Like, I don't know, Joey, this seems like really complicated. He's like, no.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be great.
That opening shot's so cool.
It's going to be great. Trust me. And I was like,
that's where we learn everything. Like, that's like
handcuffs.
All the things that we are talking about that we point out later, like we learn from the opening shot. You know? So it's like.
And so we had that long, we start on your handcuffs, go up to you, and then there's this long one take where, you know, we're focused on you. We had to cue Will to come out in the right time and start talking and then slowly move and make sure that the focus is staying and we stay with the mug and then we only reveal Will at the end. And it turned out great. I'm so happy we did it.
You guys really shot the heck out of it. It looks really good.
Yeah.
It was just a fun night of shooting too. Yeah. And we had Chai, our intern, play the ninja.
Intern Chai is the ninja in the background.
Yeah, shout out Chai.
Is he credited on the video?
I don't know. We should
give him a little
podcast.
Maybe he wasn't really there.
The best part about Chai was like method ninja-ing, like because we were just gonna have, you know, we cut back to him not being there, but instead he like would fly to the floor
before the camera even
like went back, and he just like lie there on the floor for the entire rest of the dialogue, and he did it like 3 or 4 times. Props to Chai.
And he's like on the ceiling.
What? How'd you do that? I was originally gonna ask. I asked Chai to help out because I thought he was gonna help us boom for sound, but then we just ended up switching, so that worked out really well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good sound recording.
I learned how to sound record. So,
good sound record. Good sound mixing and design.
This video taught everybody
by Senzaki
I learned that I'm a terrific actor. So.
Okay, all right.
Shout out to Max Waller for his Carpenter score.
Flawless Carpenter score for Max.
Yeah.
I really dug it.
Nailed it so hard.
Yeah.
Max has worked with us a lot of times. He works with Rocket Jump a lot, but he works with film school a lot now too. He did like a lot of our underlying music for our tutorials, and he also did the entire thing for our intro video on the Rocket Jump channel, and like he just is very multi-talented.
He's very easy to work with. We usually communicate through email. So when I say usually, I'm assuming that he's very enthusiastic because of like
reading that into, yeah, the email.
Into the email. But, yeah. But yeah.
Well, he's very, he usually gets it on like the first pass, I oh, feel yeah. like, and then it's just small tweaks.
It's just like little
after
things.
That.
Yeah.
So
it's, yeah.
Max,
so.
You rack.
Yeah. If you,
Max.
If you guys want to check him out, I think it's maxtonwaller.com.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, he sweet. He also did the music for that VGHS Netflix trailer we did.
Oh, yeah.
With
right.
that song that literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody thought that was like a Kings of Leon or, right. you know,
yeah.
whatever, what it's, whatever
so
the
I don't
other
know his band
is.
Name, but we should put it in the link. He also did in season 3, his music shows up.
Yeah.
There's
he's,
this like. In the episode, season 3, episode 3 of VGHS,
finale.
There's that. No, it's
oh,
a,
no.
season 3, episode 3. There's like that Ted's prison drug deal basketball
oh.
dunking montage. Like there's that like hard ass rock song. Like, and that's his band. It's a great song.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's called Glass House, I think.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That. Yeah, I remember. That was a. I was like, this is your brother's band, and
yeah.
Jimmy's all in jail. And it was like,
yeah,
it was
it
sweet.
Came out really
yeah,
well.
It,
yeah.
it fit pretty perfect.
He
did 90s commercial. The
oh,
little,
did he?
The jingles.
Oh, BK Pizza Pigskins.
Yeah.
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 Pizza
yeah.
He
yeah.
ripped that
he
out
nailed
in like 30
it.
Minutes
yeah.
or something like
oh
that.
God.
Just like
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That song's still
know,
stuck in my head.
I can't commit to 30 minutes as an estimate of his time, but it was very fast.
I just remember Dez just having the conversation, and we were just laughing our asses off talking about put as many puns as you can into
yeah.
all these like cheesy lyrics
oh,
with
man.
The
Batman
know.
And Robin style.
He came up with it, again. It's the Big Game Pizza. He came up with it, pizza that tastes better on a football.
Pizza that tastes better on a football.
And your taste buds
a
tackle. Like yeah. both of which were like perfect. I was like,
oh
it's one of those. As a writer, you're like, what am I doing here?
Well, he could write little commercial jingles. Like there's no reason why the Folgers thing wasn't
oh,
made
man.
Up by Max.
That's yeah.
You guys should get
yeah.
him on the podcast.
Yeah,
we should.
Talk to
we
him.
Should do that next
yeah.
time.
No.
Great.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean,
just vetoed.
Pretty preemptive.
I'm just kidding.
We.
All right. So
that's not happening.
Maybe a tutorial on how to collaborate with people for Cherish.
Yeah. yeah.
One.
Just
be open to a new idea.
You just need a lot of spreadsheets.
Yes.
And no friends.
No friends.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about what for people who haven't watched the video yet?
Sure.
What is exposition, really?
So exposition is the. To me, the classic way to point out exposition is like anytime there's an electromagnetic pulse in a movie, someone
yeah.
goes like, it's an EMP. And then someone goes, what's an EMP? And they go, it's an electromagnetic pulse. It knocks out all electronic devices in a 12-mile radius. That's exposition. That's mm-hmm. someone
yeah.
explaining to you what this bomb is going to do so that when the little blue pulse ripples out over Las
mm-hmm.
Vegas and the lights in the casino go out and then
she's
the ninjas walking. Sneak in,
yeah.
you know that that was what happened, right?
Ninjas.
So the... exposition is all of, it's the it's how you're conveying information to your audience that's important for them to be able to understand the story.
Do you think you need it?
Exposition? I mean, it's kind of it's something that I mean, yes, you do. I would say you definitely do. I think people get we go into this in the study guide. There's like all sorts of different ways that you can convey information to an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's really easy. Again, it's like your main character is a cop. Show don't tell, have them in a, you know, putting their badge on in the morning, like as
yeah.
opposed to just having someone be like, he's a cop, and then they're just in plain clothes and you're hearing this all being explained to you, like
mm-hmm.
that's boring.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the idea is you never want to stop the drama.
Yeah.
So you want to, like in an ideal world, never have to just, like characters in a script, sharing a story should always be in conflict. They should always be pursuing a goal. Like you want to, there are varying schools of thought on that. Like you can have a nice leisurely
mm-hmm.
sequence if that's, you know, ultimately it just has to be entertaining. But generally speaking, where a lot of exposition goes bad is when the filmmaker's been going along on this really good clip. And then again, like you've got something complicated that has to happen. So you just stop all the drama, and now you're having this kind of dry scene of somebody explaining something to somebody else,
mm-hmm.
and there's there's nothing for the audience to engage in. It's just like they're being briefed on something.
Mm-hmm.
This drove me crazy in Interstellar. There's this sequence in Interstellar that, not to just dog on Christopher Nolan, because I actually think he's a great filmmaker, but there's this moment that drives me up the wall where it's like they get all the way into space, and then they explain to Matthew McConaughey what a wormhole is. Like right before they go to the wormhole,
and you think that a person who's in space would know have like a general idea.
Yeah, it's
idea.
Like he's a freaking astronaut. Like what the hell? Like it was like one of those things that took me out of it because it was like it was obviously time for the audience to learn what a wormhole was and how they were going to go through it and what the point of this was. But it threw me out of it because in a dramatic context, it didn't make sense. It was just like the story stopped to have a little lecture on space time. Whereas again, like I think in that scene from Escape from New York, like the all of the mission briefing, all of the stuff the audience needs to know about the president crash landing and then, mm-hmm. you know, him needing to get rescued and Snake having this mysterious past. It's all conveyed within the context of a fun, dramatic scene. It's Snake versus this sinister army general. You're getting, he's being, you know, kind of a punk to him.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of turns like that. They have that whole turn where he gets injected and then he finds out he's got bombs in him and he'll blow up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like they, so
I think Carpenter has some just really interesting ways of doing exposition scenes. I was just thinking about the alley fight with Keith David and Roddy Piper, because that's exposition. It's like, but it turns into a fight. It's like the drama doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It just gets intensified like to the 11 because it's like put on these sunglasses and then you will see what I mean. Like the world is different. And then Keith David's like, no, I'm not putting on those sunglasses. So then he's like, no, put these things on, and then it turns into a, and then it turns into a 15-minute ass-kicking scene.
Well, there's like, I wanted to bring it back to Interstellar because the scene I think that gets a lot of heat for bad exposition is the scene with Matthew McConaughey and Murph's teachers, where he's like, well, science didn't save my wife from cancer, and it's like, okay, what? Like
Murph.
Yeah, he goes, Murph. No, that's just like that. That's a scene where I think trying to portray the backstory, the exposition just falls flat, even though there's like a relationship that you know what I mean. There's like tension between the school administrators and him, but it just doesn't work.
In Star Trek,
it seems very heavy.
Carl Urban, like one of the first things he says is like he's drunk and that his like ex-wife is a bitch or something. I don't know. And then, but that's exposition.
She left me with my bones or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, but then, but that comes off as like humor as opposed to being like crappy exposition, because the way it was presented was sort of like, this is who that guy is.
Yeah.
Like he just complains about
his
problems.
That's one thing that I noticed watching TNG is that the character of Data is basically there to explain things. Because you take away like human social awareness, and then if you ask him a question, he's going to explain exactly what is it happening, and he's explaining it to engineers and scientists, so it's like they obviously know the concept, but we need to know the concept.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so Data's like, I'll just list off all these things, and they can pretend to be like, oh, Data, we already know, but like the audience is like, oh, cool, like now I know.
That's so great.
But they use an entire character and his weirdness to like always slip in like some technical jargon that we have to know about.
Right. It's definitely like one of the things I love about TNG are those boardroom scenes.
Yes.
Where it's like, to me, like there's no clearer difference between original Star Trek and Next Generation Star Trek, that like on Next Generation Star Trek, like we're all going to sit down and discuss this. Like
we're going to have a meeting.
We're going to just all have a meeting in space, like space meetings.
So everyone, including the audience, is on the same page.
And it's one of those things where it's, because here's the other thing about exposition. It's easy to get, you know, like, well, it's got to be integrated into the drama and it's got to be like this and that. And it's like, in my experience, screenwriting is more of a bar fight than like a martial art. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to just use whatever you can handily grab to bash the audience over the head. It's whatever works is what I mean. You know what I mean? Like,
it's not delicate.
You get points for getting the job done, not for being pretty about it. So like if you've got like worst comes to worst, like in a show like that, like Next Generation, like they're explaining some very hard science, tricky stuff with tachyons and space-time particle ripples and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it does help to just have a character be like, here's what the hell is going on. In Futurama, they joke about it. They always explain it really complicated and then distill it to a metaphor, like putting too much air in a balloon or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing, I think, is just clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would much rather... It's one of those things, it's easy to rip on. And again, it's like, it's easy to rip on the, like, oh, it's an electromagnetic pulse, it knocks out, blah, 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 blah. But it's like I need to know that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, I would much rather a filmmaker not play it too cool and, like, try to be subtle and, like, you know, not try to be, like, I would much rather someone just be like, here's what the hell is going on, so that I can understand and enjoy the drama.
Absolutely.
And, like, okay, yes, maybe we had to slow down for 30 seconds to explain that, but as long as you're being focused and economical and you're just telling the audience what they need to know in a clear and concise way, and then you're getting back into the drama, which I think is what Star Trek would always do very well, is you've got a character like Data and be like, here's what's going on. Like, hey, Geordi, let's talk about this for 10 seconds and then we're going to keep going.
Yeah.
Especially in a show like that where it's like so much of the episodes, there'll be like a, you know, like, I think about the one where... like time keeps, like their Groundhog's Day episode where time keeps looping around,
and they have
like
to find something different each time to become aware of what's happening, and
so much of the, like, there's an interesting example where a lot of the drama of the exposition is in that they are figuring something out. There's a mystery, And the drama we're following is them figuring out what's going on and solving the mystery. So a lot of the information is coming out. Like, a lot of the drama is that the characters don't understand what's going on either. And it's critical to their story that they learn and figure out what's going on. And that can be, like, a lot of mystery movies function on that very, like, that's why, like, at the end of Zodiac, you can be on the edge of your seat for a scene as simple as, like, the two guys explaining the theory of the crime. Because figuring out that information is part of the drama, and that can be satisfying.
How do you explain, like, the ending of Psycho, where it's like the last 7 minutes is the psychologist just explaining what schizophrenia is or these things, but it ends on like the most like expletive thing ever. Like
Hitchcock because that was Hitchcock didn't want that in there, right?
I don't remember.
I feel like that was one of those ones where it was like a pretty famous like studio note the being studio like you gotta have like, him explain why he's crazy.
That's insane.
It does have that. He does end on that really. What sells it is just that it's just on that creepy shot of Anthony Perkins just staring at the camera. So it's like okay, like it's creepy enough that I'm not even really listening to what this guy is saying.
They saved what could have been.
Well,
just
definitely
like,
still. Yeah, I think it's artfully done.
Yeah.
So you're still. Yeah. You know, it's like well
they found
done
a way to take that and then turn it into something a little bit more chilling.
Yeah. Right.
I was gonna ask though, is it worth talking about like great movies that use very little exposition? Can we even think about examples that way?
I was trying to think about Memento because the character knows his condition and it just keeps explaining it over and over because he doesn't know if he's met this person.
Right.
So I don't know, the repetition of the fact that he constantly has to remind people and himself of.
Well, I think the conceit of that movie makes that a special case too.
Yeah. Well, Christopher Nolan's movies are really interesting that way. Again, like Inception is constantly explaining itself, but I think doing it in a pretty compelling way.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think the twists and turns of what's going on, like, it's conveyed pretty cinematically, and like there's a real nice momentum to it. Mm-hmm. In terms of movies that don't, I'm trying to think. That's like a tricky question. I'm trying to wrap my head around like a movie that's like very mysterious.
I don't know why. I just thought of Kindergarten Cop. I was just thinking about that.
But
there's tons of exposition in that movie. I just think it's a good movie.
All the
it's
movies that I'm thinking
it's not
about,
a Duma.
Like I realized, oh, that did have exposition. I just didn't notice it.
It's generally speaking. Well, that's and I think that's a mistake a lot of people make is that like you can look at a movie like Les Samurai, right? Mm-hmm. Which has like no dialogue. It's not like they're like, Alain Delon is a grizzled hitman on one last thing, and this is his backstory, and blah blah blah. Like
the quote they start the movie, and like a lot of the visual elements are very expository.
Well, right? even the quote is more poetic than anything. It's just like he's like a samurai in the jungle or whatever. That movie is very sparse in terms of what it gives you in terms of the audience. Like his character is very mysterious. The whole situation is very mysterious. But it's really more of a case of a director knowing just exactly what he needs to do to show you what's going on. Like just like even like down to the small detail. Like he's got that huge key ring. Like that. Oh, he steals a lot of cars. Like he's a criminal. Like he realizes he doesn't need to give you a lot. And I think that a lot of times you'll see in sort of. People want to get that vibe, that cool, mysterious vibe, and then they just whiff it entirely, and you don't understand who the guy is or what he's doing or why.
Yeah.
You can run into danger that way if you don't know exactly what you're doing.
I feel like that is related to this question we just had in the forums, actually, by this guy named Norman, who was like cutting a lot of trailers, but he liked Fincher trailers, because they're, you don't know a lot of the plot, but they're like very mysterious, they're very cool. And then the thing I kind of was talking about him with is that Fincher trailers might seem random, the visuals and stuff like that, but every shot is picked very specifically because of the visual information, right? I think that, I feel like that's related. There's, you're not being straight out told anything, but like the video is, exposition is about the visual elements too, suits, handcuffs and stuff like that. That tells you a lot of the story, which is interesting.
I think a good way to look at exposition and that kind of stuff is also short films because you have to get a lot of information across even more quickly. Mm-hmm. Like the Pixar animated short films. And I was thinking about WALL-E and how they set up the entire history of what happened to Earth in like supermarket commercials that were just on repeat and running on the silent planet and that kind of stuff. And then there are a lot of their shorts don't have a lot of dialogue or anything like that. And they establish world rules really quickly and efficiently. So I think short films are a good place to go to kind of look
at. Absolutely, yeah. Animation in general, I think. They again, it's the Or like, yeah, even like you have Wile E. Coyote. You know what I mean? Like the like you like the way that they set up like the him looking at the picture of the rocket powered skates, and you're like, oh god, here we go.
Definitely any animation, because you could tell like they're visually gonna have to go. They have to. Pixar movies make the movie before the movie's done. They make it in storyboards and other things like four or five times before they actually start rendering things and getting to that point. And so I think they're always on point with visually telling the story and communicating that. Yeah.
It's not quite as traditional, but like that opening sequence of Up, like that could have an amateur move would have been to just have that be backstory, right? Mm-hmm. Like you could have gotten a lot of that just from like a shot of Carl just looking at a picture of his dead wife and like sighing, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, he has a dead wife. That's sad. Yeah. Like but it's like, that could have been something you doled out piecemeal over the course of the movie, but they were like, no, we're going to take this, because again, it's backstory to the story, but it's like, they're like, we're going to take this backstory, we're going to dramatize it, we're going to make it incredibly compelling, we're going to stick it right at the front so everybody knows what's up with this guy. Right.
Yeah. And that's arguably the most memorable part of that whole movie.
Yeah, for sure.
And I
for
think
sure.
they did have, originally, they had it intercut through that entire, I'm reading Creativity Inc., which like I tell everybody who's listening to this podcast should get that book or go to the library.
It's
great.
It's
like, but he was talking about how Up started, which was like a story about two princes in like a sky kingdom that got banished from that kingdom and have to get back up. The core of the movie stayed the same, but the movie itself like got thrown out.
It's very biblical.
It always came back to Can't Up. And so, but then the first original things of that script were like, it was intercut and wasn't making sense. And then they were like, no, this has to be linear. And that decision was putting all of that at the beginning of the film. And
Finding Nemo similarly as well, actually.
Oh, yeah.
That
might have been the right example.
They had the whole, again, this whole backstory with him and Nemo and the wife. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the opening sequence. Mm-hmm. And then, Stanton wanted to have it be revealed throughout. And again, it's like, because that's the other thing about exposition is it's as much about timing as it is about, it's not only what does the audience need to know, it's when, right? Yeah. Like, obviously, like, there was a perfect case of, like, if you don't have all that information at the beginning, you're like, why is this guy such a paranoid jerk to his son?
You didn't like Marlin at all until the end of the movie. It's like, why would you want to spend a whole movie with someone you don't like until
the
end?
So it was just mystery for mystery's sake, and it didn't really add anything. But then you compare that to, like, so that's an example where it's really important to understand this about this character for you to be along that journey. But then you look at, like, Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. And like we mentioned in the thing, and spoiler alert, Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father. Like that could have very easily been something that they're like, oh, well, we should know this in A New Hope. Like Obi-Wan Kenobi should be like, oh, he's your father, you know, like is this guy. Yeah. But it's like, no, you hold on to that and you drop this bomb right here at this exact moment and let it play as a turn. Yeah. And again, it's about how do you use the information in the history of your story, not just like to explain things to the audience, but how do you use the characters discovering that information as well to heighten the drama?
Right. Because I think if you looked at Finding Nemo and if the backstory was revealed in intercuts throughout the whole movie, then you might not play Marlin as quite so paranoid in the beginning, because then it just wouldn't make sense. So if they did decide to intercut it, then Marlin would have like his character would be portrayed differently. So I think that affects like how you're choosing to portray your character, to what degree of like what personality trait, like how paranoid he is.
I mean, I started thinking about Shawshank and the revealing of information like the tunnel when he was escaping out. If they had done that throughout where you see him working back there doing his thing, it's like, no, you hold on to that and you show it at the right time. But also all the exposition in that film is told through the perspective of like a character, you know, which is also completely different than most like a lot of other movies. If it's specifically in the voice of like Morgan Freeman experiencing things, then anything that he says, it might be exposition, but it's also like just his whole worldview, you know, which might be whatever, you know, he's learning, he's imperfect.
Right. It's interesting because people get really worked up about voiceover. They're like, you can't have voiceover.
Yeah.
Right.
I think Robert McKee in Story has a really interesting thing he says about voiceover where he's like, look, if you could take the voiceover out and the audience could still understand the movie, then keep the voiceover in. Like, if you think it adds something. It's mm-hmm. like, because essentially you're using mm. it as flavor. You know what I mean? Oh, like the
that's totally
like,
different than what I thought he was going to say.
Yeah.
Because you look at like a Woody Allen movie, like you can understand Annie Hall and snip out all of his voiceover rants and like, or like Manhattan, right? Like mm-hmm. his whole opening sequence at the beginning of Manhattan is hilarious. It doesn't add anything to the story
yeah.
on like a technical level in terms of like, you know, understanding the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fun flavor and yeah. it really sells the tone and the vibe the way a soundtrack would.
Mm-hmm. You're adding it because it add something rather than you're not adding it because you have to.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a
your
crutch.
Story will fall
it's
apart.
It's not load bearing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not mm-hmm. like you take it out and everything falls over. You know, mm-hmm. it's decoration.
Yeah.
But it can be decoration. It's like a seasoning that really can like really bring out something in the dish, so to speak, yeah. mm-hmm. of the tortured metaphor of the movie. Yeah.
Blade Runner, that's the director's cut where they took out all the voiceover because they didn't need it.
It was, and they didn't want to do it. And it was like, again, it was like someone being like, man, we need to know that they're robots.
Yeah,
that
we need to know what he's thinking. Yeah. We need to, and, but it's like, no, that's, you get what he's thinking in mm-hmm. that case, you know, it's, and so I'm glad that they have so many different versions of that film to mm-hmm. study because you can then compare the two.
Yeah. So I think that a lot of people think of voiceover as an expository tool.
Right.
When I think they should think of it more as a narrative framing tool mm-hmm. or a, again, almost like a, you would a music choice or like, you know, a character choice.
Stylistic or tone.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of Blade Runner, we had a little reference to that at the beginning opening title scroll.
Oh, yeah. Blade Runner. Again, in Blade Runner, that's a perfect little, again, or Star Wars is literally the same thing. It's like a title crawl. It's like, and again, like Blade Runner, it's like that sickly, weird colored font and like just over black and like it sets up the tone so nicely.
Right.
And then just the way it ends on that line, like this was not called execution. It was called retirement.
They specifically highlight things.
What's the red? What's the red word in Blade
Runner? Blade Runner. It's like so-called Blade Runners.
Yeah.
Well, we have to start wrapping this up.
Okay.
I think that's
you
know. I think this was really fascinating getting into the timing and the tone mm-hmm. and like voice. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
But we're gonna start wrapping this up. Thank you guys for talking about Escape from Dull Exposition, which I think is like one of our coolest mm-hmm. tutorials. And I hope you guys learned something. If you have a question about anything on this podcast, we'll have a post in the forums. We can link to any of the books or movies that we talked about, that kind of stuff. But thanks, guys.